Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Chef's Story. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today we are broadcasting from the International Culinary Center with one of our alumni, albeit when it was the French Culinary Institute. We have Michael Corey with us today, who's the head concept chef at OTG, which is a small boutique restaurant company that services many airports, I think about 10 airports right now. I am so excited, I have to tell everybody about this interview, because I think what Michael does is cutting edge, it's the future, and I really can't wait to hear what he has to say about dining in the future, not just in restaurants, but how we're going to do volume dining. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much. Welcome back.
Yeah,
it is ICC. Like coming home. It really is.
That's good. Unfortunately, Alain is not here, Chef Alain, today. It's August, like any sane Frenchman, he's in France. But nice to have you. So you're a Jersey boy, huh?
I am a dirty white trash Jersey boy. I'm very proud of that. And
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Plainfield is where my family's from. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a town called Watchung, which is literally, you know, without traffic, a half hour from where we're sitting.
Yeah. When you were growing up, was your family heavy into food?
You know, they were. I hate the cliche, and you're putting me in a corner to say both my grandparents.
You know,
do exactly what I despise. But seriously, both my grandparents, on my father's side, they're Lebanese. So my grandmother would grow grape leaves in the backyard and farmer's cheese in Lebanon and really was quite phenomenal in the Lebanese delicacies that she would make all the time.
Did she make her own farmer's cheese?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know how she made it?
No, I don't. I was a little kid and just, you know, it was normal, you know, to have those, you know, za'atar and these great grape leaves and fetayas and... It was just all part of our normal upbringing. Where my mother's mother grew up on West 4th Street, and my grandfather is from Apulia. Oh,
great combination. Yep. You've got the two sides of the Mediterranean.
Two sides of the Mediterranean. And, you know, it was phenomenal because holidays, like a Thanksgiving, there would be all these great – we'd go to both their homes and – besides the American classics, we'd have all these great specialties out, whether it was some type of a thick, chewy pasta in a anchovy type of base sauce or baked pasta dish like that.
Do you have siblings?
Oh, yeah. I'm the oldest, and then
there's four of us. Four of you. Because I was going to say, did your friends think you ate weird food? The Lebanese ones.
Yeah, no, not really, you know. No.
Did you share the food with other kids?
Oh, sure.
Everybody loved it.
Yeah, everyone loved it. You know, it's one of those great just, you know, flavors and food and to dig into, you know. It's also not to, I'm assuming, because, you know, a lot of it, you know, you rip a piece of lofta or pita and you just dip in and, you know, and dive right into it. So that's always, I guess, puts down that guard of, you know, geez, how do I eat this kind of thing?
Right. It's almost like a pizza.
Yeah.
People could. So I'm fascinated by your Lebanese grandmother. So the grape leaves, did you cook with her?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So did you watch her brine the...
Oh, yeah. So really a couple of my favorite dishes growing up as a kid, which is kind of odd because you asked me about the sibling thing. My brothers and sisters are really not Epicureans at all. I mean, you know, my sister, who's 5 years younger than me, I think really still her diet is pizza and bagel. And if she has anything that is cooked, it's literally, you're probably better off eating your shoe. That's how well cooked it is, whether it's chicken or steak or, my baby brother is probably the most inventive, where, you know, he likes going out to eat with me because he likes to experience new things and try different things. But the weird part of it, all of them eating Italian and eating Lebanese, they'll eat all of that. But to go out and sit and have sushi, you know, they'd be like, especially my sister. But my two other brothers, they are more adventurous than that.
So when did, when you were growing up, did you have visions of being a chef, or did you have visions of being something else?
Well, you know, I did try to. I tried a couple different things. One of them was to play professional hockey, and that's,
you still have your teeth.
I
see. There's some. There's a little chip there.
but really, that's how my story began. I was living down by the Princeton area. And working for this restaurant group, they own a place called the Tiger's Tail right outside of Princeton. And the bartender's cook. And I thought it was, like, really interesting and kind of cool. And
the bartender's cook?
Yeah.
What did they cook?
Well, so we had a grill, and we'd cook everything from a 24-ounce Kansas City sirloin to kebabs to burgers, roasted clams. It's a really kind of a cool concept.
There were either cooks that became bartenders or bartenders that became cooks?
No,
or
their whole, believe it or not, their whole training was bartenders to become cooks. They had a place called the Varsity Club in Fairhaven is where I worked before I moved to that area, and a couple places in Howell, and really, my savior was Craig Shelton, and he would come into my bar, and I'd speak with him, and, you know, I had no idea who he was, and, you know, where other people were like, oh, my gosh, you know, like, the Messiah is here.
Yeah, the Ryland Inn, very, you know, it was, what, 4 stars in the New York Times?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it really cool stuff. I guess because I didn't know who he was and I didn't understand that culture, I was not intimidated at all. Plus, as a bartender, you know, you have that attitude anyway. So I was like, hey, you know, I want to work for you, you know. He's like, yeah, sure.
Why did you want to work for him?
You know, well, I came to the point where the reality was I was never going to be a professional hockey player. And I really liked the career that I was doing. I knew there had to be more to it besides, I guess, in my personality. I wanted more. And I like the, I always enjoyed cooking, and as a kid, I worked in every pizza parlor and this place called Uncle Vinny's Clam Bar, where literally you can get like a great, you know, vongole and place a bet for Monday night. You know, it was like one of those kind of places where when I started, actually Uncle Vinny got incarcerated. So
you can't make this stuff up.
So, but, you know, Craig gave me a shot and really was – I worked for him for 2 years before I came here.
Really?
Yeah. That's how I ended up here.
Okay. So this is interesting because a lot of people say, why go to cooking school today?
And he said the same thing to me.
Why go to cooking school? So you've worked for an extraordinary chef in a great restaurant for 2 years. What made you feel you had to go to cooking school, and what did you learn?
Well, the funny part was, you know, I was, you know, with Craig, I was a staging base. You know, I mean, I'd worked there, and I worked at Uncle Vinny's, and I delivered newspapers. And I was probably the oldest newspaper delivery person on the planet. Like, that, you know, that comedy, remember with Chris, what was his name? He was in those funny Cohen movies. They made a show about it. That was me. I mean, as I was going here, I was still delivering newspapers. Craig brought me, I said, you know, chef, you know, I need to make money at this at some point. I see the vision, and I think it's really great. So, of course, we went to his office, and he was like, well, you know, it's time for you now to go to France and go work for Joe Robuchon. Or I was like, I'm like in my late 20s. Like, I need to start making money. He goes, I found this place called the French Culinary Institute. I'd love to be able to go there. And to your point, he said, you know, you're working the fish station at the Ryland Inn. You know, what do you want to do with it? That's exactly what he said, what you were saying. I said, you know, I want to be a restaurateur. He goes, well, that's the right answer. I know the right person, the one person to call for you. Of course, I didn't have something to put in a pot or throw it out of a window, but he called Chef Jacques for me.
Pen.
Yeah.
Well, Jacques Pepin.
And sure enough, I Craig Style just reached over the counter of his desk and said, here, talk to this guy. And he was like, well, come down to Ecole and you can meet me. And so I did. I met Chef the next day in the restaurant, and he gave me a glass of white wine, and we spoke for a little while. And, you know, Craig and Chef, both chefs, helped me get enrolled in finance to come here.
Wow. And so what did you learn in school that you didn't have in the restaurant?
A lot. You know, the Ryland Inn, as a great, training ground, it's you are in kind of a bubble there, you know. And I worked in a bunch other locations, but really it is a bubble, in a good way, positive way, you know. But then being here and being exposed to the different levels, like, you know, level one was upstairs here, and then going into level two and cooking for family, for everyone. And it really, it was definitely a different perspective of what I was doing. And I don't ever think, I think it's the first thing that people say, right? You're going to learn something every day. So regardless of what your knowledge is, I learned so much coming in here. I definitely think it is what made me today. And I'd probably be on a different path if I just stayed at the Ryland and went somewhere else.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Why? And how did it change your path?
Well, it exposed me to a lot of different people, definitely different people. Like really one of the first great experiences and people besides Craig of who I wanted to be like was I was in the Fulton Market one morning because now, you know, I'm a young commie and you want to absorb all the knowledge possible, and I'm there. And sure enough, Gilbert Lecoz comes in.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
From Lebernardin.
Oh, yeah. But, you know,
the god.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what it was. And here comes this guy, gets out of a cab and, you know, dressed to the hill, dressed to the nines, smoking a cigarette with a bottle of cognac and two gorgeous women. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's not even a Beatle. He's like a Rolling Stone. And just walks through and says, this, no, yes, okay, let's go. And into the cab, and off he went. And I said, that's who I want to be.
You're right.
Like, my gosh, I could be that.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, and then along the way, you know, you're here at school and you're working and going to school and learning and you know, like an Eric Repair comes walking through or a Daniel Balud comes walking through and, you know, you're just exposed. And it's not like you can't go up to them. You know, when you're sitting there and I'm cutting fish one day and an Eric Repair comes up to you and goes, oh, what are you doing? You know, like you freeze. You're afraid to touch the fish. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God, what do I do? Right. You know, but they're also approachable.
Yeah. No. Chefs are generous. They nurture. We're going to take a break here, and we'll be right back.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Chef's Story, and today my guest is Chef Michael Corey, who is the head concept chef for OTG Restaurant Group. Well, Michael, you're talking, so you get out of school. Where was your first job?
Well, I worked all through school, so at the Ryland, and then I had left the Ryland, and I went to work at a restaurant called the Frenchtown Inn in Frenchtown, New Jersey, which, ironically, I went in there one day. Andy Tomko, who owns the inn, just purchased it with his wife. He was my age. He had gone through, I think he went to Johnson & Wales. I worked at the Black Swan, and really, you know, and he was interested in giving me a shot, you know, and really did. And I spent a good couple of years with him, and one of really my favorite teachers besides Chef Henri was Chef Jacques and Richard. And he used to come out there on the weekends. So almost every weekend he would come out and have lunch at the inn, which was, you know, to me just so cool because it's that part of the Delaware, they have lots of antiquing and, yeah, and so forth. So I worked with Andy for a couple of years. Went back to Craig, who was, you know, basically my Epicurean father, and said, okay, you know, here I am in my life. Like, what is my next step? And I had got an offer from the Inn of Washington, Inn of Washington, Virginia.
And, with Patrick O'Connell?
Yeah. And I forget their HR person. I think her name was like Ann Shahid. So when she saw my name, you know, of course, immediately on the phone, she's like, you're Lebanese? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, and she warned me, okay, when you come down here, be prepared. Make sure you have everything because it's 45 minutes to get, you know, if you forget your toothpaste, you know, you're traveling for 45 minutes. And Craig was like, you know, that's great. You're doing that kind of stuff here with us, and why don't you go to Charlie Trotter's? I'm like, yeah, sure. Well, like, why don't I become the president? So he goes, no, I'll make a phone call. And sure enough, the next day I was on a flight to Chicago with a garbage hefty bag of my clothes and ended up in Chicago, which was kind of funny. I actually stayed at a girl I went to culinary school with. Her sister and her husband had a condo, you know, like a kind of a walk-up in Lincoln Park, which is gorgeous. But I got there early. I didn't know anybody. I had my bag, and there was a place called Frankie's. So I went in to have a beer. The guys just took one look at me, and they go, hey, what eggs are you from? And I said, what are you, a smart, you know? Like, no, we're from Hoboken. And I was like, how can you tell them from Jersey? He's like, it's very easy to tell somebody from New Jersey. So that was really interesting. You know, Charlie Trotter's kitchen was completely like anything I had never seen before.
Okay, tell us how.
You know, kind of how we set the restaurants up in the airport is really not too far off of what Charlie Trotter's was. You know, you were responsible for all of your own pot washing and cleaning up after yourself. There wasn't a dishwasher. There was really only a person that steamed the stemware. So as you're working all through the day, you're responsible for your sheet pans, your pots, your pans, your tongs, as well as you had 36 different purveyors coming in every day. No walk-ins. You had a couple three-door Charlestons in the back of the restaurant, and you made everything every day. You know, it was truly pretty aggressive. Yeah, and aggressive.
So
how many in the kitchen?
There's, if I remember correct, there was like 17 of us. And really, a kitchen that was not very big. Like, I perceived it was going to be a big. Like, at the Rylan Inn, we had, like, a classic French kitchen that way with the French tops and everything. This was really quite stuffed. I mean, we were jammed in there pretty good.
What did you learn from Charlie?
You know, I guess what I learned, I guess what I did not want to do. You know, I guess my style of cooking, it was just, it seemed like there was just so many different ingredients. And it was, to me, a lot of it was overthought. Where, you know, I definitely have the more of the Mario Batali philosophy of, you give me three. Give me three ingredients, and I'll give you some of that taste. Very good, but it was very good. You know, it was good to you definitely learn how to work with people in tight quarters for long hours. And if anything, I walked away with I guess more of a Marine mentality of, you know, I run into people like Bill Kim or Michelle Geyer or, you know, Giuseppe or one of these guys that worked there. And you know, you see these folks and it's kind of, you know, you've been through the war with them, you know, which was really kind of cool.
What was the most delicious thing you remember cooking there?
Wow.
What was the most delicious thing at the Rylan Inn?
Rylan Inn. I see. That's funny. Okay. I could tell you it is, my nemesis. I was in charge of his lobster tart. So you actually dropped the lobster to water, and then you broke the lobster, and then you built the tart with a foamed chanterelles and foamed beurre blanc, saffron beurre blanc, if I remember correctly. I mean, I only did it probably about a billion times, and you built this tart. So on a Saturday night, when the the pot is, you know, he only had the oblong. And the lobsters are screaming at you because you can't get them into the water deep enough. And
what a horrible thought.
It is. But really, that's, I mean, I thought that was the coolest, you know.
Interesting. So after Charlie's, what happened? When did you start getting into the OTG? How did you get recruited there? Was there a lot of time between?
Yeah, there was. I owned. You know, I had worked for Mario Batali and Mark Ladner. Mark and I were at Lupa together.
Lupa was phenomenal.
It still is. You know, honestly, it's truly the only restaurant that I've worked at that I go back to eat at. And I literally was just there last week. I popped in, had a meeting late in the city. I said, you know what, I need a macchiato. You know, I just need, and popped in, had a glass of wine and a bowl, and popped back out to Jersey. But so I had the pleasure of working for Mario and working with Mark, who still is probably one of my closest friends, who's amazing.
He's terrific.
He really
Mark
is.
Mark Ladner. He really is. They call him Puck.
That's,
you know, right?
That's funny.
Because he's the one who really brought Lupa to where it is.
Oh, I mean, you know, honestly, I would argue with any of those guys. I think he brought Babbo. The reason why anybody spoke about Babbo was because of him, quite honestly, and his experience with Wiley and working on Jean-Georges and having that vision of taking and making really pretty food and putting an Italian spin on it, you know? And still being so pretty, but rustic, which is really quite amazing. So Mark, you know, I love him. And next time, because it's probably not appropriate on a radio station, you should ask Mark what, everyone has a nickname in the Batali organization. So mine was quite interesting.
Oh, all right. Got that one. Okay. So then, so you went to Lupa and then?
Lupa helped open Otto, and then I worked with Dan Latham, and we did the salumi at Italian Wine Merchants. And then I was working at different locations Still working with Dan. I just thought the salumi aspect was just so cool. I opened a place in Hoboken, New Jersey, with this guy, Dave Carney, who is a really great guy. Has a place called Madison Bar and Grill in Hoboken. It's a staple kind of place. He took a chance on me, and we opened a place called the Jefferson, which did really, really well. And then I opened a French brasserie out in central New Jersey called Circa. When I was there, a person I had worked for years ago went and started working in the airport and got in contact with me. I opened up a sushi portion of this restaurant because we owned the building. And he kept calling me when I opened the sushi restaurant. And he's our COO now, Scott Eidelberg. And he wanted to talk to me. And I said, you know, Scott, I tell you what, don't be cheap about this. Bring your wife out. You could see me at the sushi bar, and you could talk all you want. Spend some money, you know, like, I'm trying to make a living here. And he did, and he was telling me about this guy, Rick Blatstein, and what he wants to do in airports. And, you know, I just couldn't get my head around it. And he goes, just come out and meet us. So I went to LaGuardia with Rick and Scott, and really it was a consulting job to do Terminal 5. And Rick
was at LaGuardia.
At JFK, terminal, JFK. The JetBlue terminal. And we spoke for the afternoon. And, you know, Rick was like, Scott tells me that you're friends with a lot of these guys in the city. This is what we're trying to do. And I sat and I listened to this guy's vision and his passion and what he wanted to do. And I was like, man, this guy is like, he's out there, but really, really cool. And he was like myself. He was a blue-collar guy, was in the nightclub business in Philly, and really just had a true vision, you know?
What year was this?
It was 10 years ago. And at the end of the conversation, he was like, well, why don't you come work with us? Why don't you come work for us? So I was like, well, you know, I have a restaurant. I own the building, you know. He goes, okay, well, you could do all that here. I'm like, wow, you know, am I going to, I have this French brasserie, you know, I want to open another restaurant, you know, I mean, try to keep up with a Keith McNally or Mary Battaglia on the things that I do, what they do, or for once be not behind the eight ball, but be able to do all different kinds of things. I said, wow, yeah, you know, this sounds great. And in true Rick style, it goes, great, you could sell your restaurants and you start in a month and a half.
Sell your restaurant.
Start in a month and a half. So I got in the car and called my wife, who was running our restaurant. And I said, hey, she goes, Michael, I could even hear it in your voice. You're up to something. I could tell. I said, yep, get our real estate person because we're selling and we're moving back to the city. So I'll be back out there in a couple hours to start on the line. And but no, we did. We sold it to our original partner. And
is it still running?
Yeah, it's still there.
Oh, okay.
12 years, going strong. And we moved to Jersey City. We own T5.
All right. Well, we're going to take it's a good place to take a little break, and we'll be back. You're listening to Chef Story, and this is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and my guest today is Michael Corey with the OTG Restaurant Group, which specializes in airports. So you've just 10 years sign on with these guys with a vision, and we all thank you.
Thank
anyone
you.
Who's ever been stranded in a, you know, we always had vodka to turn to, but you know, when the good restaurants started coming in, it was a real godsend, especially when you're stranded in the terminal terminal and you're delayed. I mean, you can actually eat a decent meal. So tell me, how did it all come about, and what were the initial challenges of doing good food in a terminal?
You know, I think the initial challenges were just challenging yourself. You know, making that commitment to do fresh and sustainable foods, and I think it worked basically because I didn't know any other way of doing. You know, and Rick, that is what he was wanted. So it wasn't like I was getting any pushback from him. If anything, I was getting a fire lit under my butt, saying, you know, well, if we're doing this, we should be doing this. Like, why aren't we making guacamole table side? And why aren't we making the sauces fresh? Why aren't we having our chefs go to Union Square Market three times a week and buying? And that's what
they do that?
Oh, yeah. Every chef in all of our locations, whether in the New York area, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Toronto.
All right, wait. For the listenership out there, where are your airports? Because this is where we want to fly into.
Well, we just took over. Newark Terminal C is our newborn right now.
That's United.
Yes, United. And we're doing some really aggressive, interesting stuff there, as well as everywhere else. LaGuardia, Terminal C and D, we're in those locations.
Are you going to be working with a big billion-dollar overhaul there?
You know, I'm not real sure of what our plans are for the future there.
Yeah, I think that's going to take 10 years, so I think you have a little time.
A little bit of time. Yeah. But knowing Rick is not big with the time thing. He's going to make sure we're doing something and keep going forward.
Right.
So
you're Minnesota.
Minnesota.
LaGuardia.
LaGuardia, JFK, Newark.
Where in JFK are you?
JFK, we're in Terminal 8, Terminal 5, and Terminal 2.
Mm-hmm. Do you take over all of the food service in those terminals?
World domination is definitely something. If you read our creed and our motto, is something that we'd like to do. So, that's when we go into a project. That's another one of Rick's. I think I'm going to speak for him. One of the things that he likes, as well as we all do, because we're able to express ourselves in a bunch of different concepts instead of just one. And we like to have something unique to each of the concepts that we do, whether it is tableside or we've been playing a lot with these Grillworks grills where you're feeding wood. You know, we're burning real wood in airports and doing some neat stuff. We have Abruzzo. We work with the Carbone Group that we make mozzarella to order. So if you order right now with the tomatoes.
This is in the airport?
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Absolutely. Yeah. Terminal C. You order the
Terminal C, United?
United.
Since when?
We've been there doing that for probably about the last year.
Oh, okay. Yep. I have to switch airlines again.
Yeah,
I have to go United.
We'd be more than happy to help you change that ticket and come in.
Yeah.
So really that has been our big focus, but we're in Toronto, in both terminals up there, which we have.
You have five, restaurants out of eight, or do you have all eight restaurants, or, you know, do they have McDonald's next to you? I mean, how does it work?
So it depends. It depends, really, I guess, working with what some of the needs and wants are from the cities that we're in. So at times there would be a McDonald's, but we came up with our own
burger place.
Yeah, quick serve. So we work with called Custom Burgers. So our first Custom Burgers was with Pat LaFrieda.
Oh my gosh,
so
how delicious.
Me, Pat, Mark, and Rick came up with a burger size, you know, fresh. It gets delivered every day with our own blend. And you get a beautiful cooked, seasoned burger, quick serve burger. Hate to say it like that, but you know, some in that form. So we like to have alternatives, and so you know, we can give you something that's.
So is that a sit down restaurant, or is that a stand up? And is Shake Shack your competitor there?
Shake Shack is in Terminal 4, and we're in Terminal 2, which we did a concept with Cesare.
Our dean here of Italian.
But my wife used to run Salumeria Rossi with him.
Yeah.
So, but I was using Cesare and Republica beans.
Oh, I love his
well
beans.
Before, you know, I was with Yvonne and, you know, phenomenal. And ended up staying part of my honeymoon with his mom and Luca with Yvonne and myself. And it was great. But so they're in Terminal 4. We're in Terminal 2. You know, same, similar concept. But yeah, sure. You know, it's
so how many employees do you have now, and how many chefs working for you?
Well, chefs, each location has its own chef. So, I think you got me on the spot on that one. That I couldn't give you a real number on that.
So how do you go about recruiting? Who do you recruit? And do you have real cooks?
Sure. So each of our locations, we have a terminal chef, which, you know, they have great resumes from whatever city that we're in. And then each of our chefs for locations, same thing. You know, I think we're fortunate where we have what we have the ability to do, what I think a lot of restaurateurs can't do in the city, is we're able to recruit because, you know what, you get a little older, you get into your 30s, the ideal of being the next Jackson Pollock of food has come and gone. Now you have a wife, you have a family. You know what? Your whole world isn't being in a restaurant or a kitchen for 18 hours. With OTG management and working with us, you know, you have the ability to have a 5-day work week, benefits, a 401k program, paid vacations, and being able to work with every purveyor that a great restaurant in New York uses. We use the same ones. So whether it's D'Artagnan or La Frida, our entire meat program is prime dry-aged meat, True World Foods to, like I said, every chef in all of our locations, whatever food, whatever green market is in that city, our chefs are required to go there 3 days a week to grab for specials and
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So now, you're the head concept chef.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a head operating chef in OTG?
I work with a guy by the name of Dan O'Donnell. So really, it's which is great for me because I have ADD. So, you know, to be able to wear different hats and do different things, I need that because I would just probably go insane if I was just doing one thing.
So tell us what the future food is in the airports. What are the exciting new concepts that you're working on?
Let's see. I'm trying.
What can you tell us?
Yeah, that's
about
what I'm trying to do. Actually, you know, you're going to see some really interesting things coming to Newark and our future. We just started also going into Houston, Texas. So part of what we love to do is we work with the great talent of whatever city that city has to offer. So in New York here, we've worked with Michael LaMonaco, Alan DeCasse, the Carbone Group, Andrew Carmelini, Dal Telde, who is phenomenal, Dan Kluger, Riyad Nasser, Lee Hansen. So, you know, they work with us on the type of concepts that they're known for, to really try to get that authentic feeling for that city. So we're just starting in Houston. So knowing what Houston has to offer, we're going to bring that
to the airport.
Oh, with a walloping punch. We're going to
Do these chefs have part stake in these restaurants, or are they just consultants for
Yeah,
them?
So that's what's different about what we do. They're consultants, true consultants in the word that, you know, they're there, and we work with them on menu and using whatever sources and resources that they use. So we just opened up two locations with Dale Telde. One of them caps an Asian beer garden, which is really, really awesome. The food that Dale helped us create is just
Now, where is this one? In Houston?
No, this one's in Newark also.
In Newark?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I got to go somewhere so I can go out there.
And then we just opened up a really awesome dumpling concept with him called Little Purse.
Oh.
And we make – so, you know, when you go into Little Korea on 33rd and 5th and you could see the making dumplings in the window.
Sure.
So we're making dumplings out –
oh,
you know, right in front of you. We do everything from soup dumplings to we make a bunch of them. We resourced with Dale, the same ones that he uses at Telde. And it is such a unique, cool little spot.
All right. What do you think of the new $15 an hour minimum wage? And how is that going to affect your company?
You know, I don't think it's going to affected in a bad way. I think it's going to affect it in a positive way. I think, people want to learn. People want better for themselves because I was one of those people. I am one of those people. To be able to go to work and not have to worry about how I'm keeping the lights on or it's one less thing you have to worry about when you get to work. You know, and if anything, I just hope people don't use it as a resting point. I hope they use it as a leverage point to accelerate, you know, especially with a company like ours. You talk to Rick and you want to do something. Say, you're right now you're a cook, but you really have a really strong passion for technology. I guarantee you he will put you with the right person, and if that's what you want to do, that's what you will be doing. And I think that's what makes us completely different than any other company and really innovative. So I think when you get it with like-minded people, you want to excel and you want to do better for yourself. And that's why I think for us at least, I think the $15 an hour can propel people.
That's a great way to look at it. How many restaurants now in total?
Ooh, we are getting close to the 300. We're like around, I think, 250 plus with the new ones coming into. We have another location that we just going to start working on. I can't speak about, but and with Houston.
And you just opened Philadelphia too recently, didn't you?
We have. That's where OTG started.
Oh,
is Philadelphia.
Okay.
So we have locations down there. We opened our last location. We opened there was in the F terminal with Jose Garces, who that guy is just he is awesome.
He is awesome.
Amada here, man, that thing is just it's killer.
Yeah.
So being able to work with him is really really cool. We opened up a location in Philadelphia with him. That was great. That was our last location.
Are you always going to stay in airports?
Yes. That I could tell you that Rick, like we'll go out to dinner somewhere. And believe me, we go out to dinner and check out what everybody's doing. And we'll sit there and be having dinner and Rick will go, you know what? I'm glad we don't do this anymore. You know, like just thinking about what they're doing and we have our own niche and we're going to be friends with all these guys and really enjoy everything they do. And we have our own thing and we're good with that.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's right. We are.
You are.
We are good with that.
Yeah.
And
what's the hardest thing about operating a restaurant in an airport?
I think in the beginning when I started with the recruiting of having chefs consult with us, I think the perception of what an airport is. So thank God I knew Mark Ladner because he was the first one to believe in what I was. Actually, I went and I spoke to Mario and Joe first. And Joe goes, you know, look, that's not really.
Joe Bastiano.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joe's like, you know, Mike, it's not really for us. But did you think about talking to Mark? And I'm like, well, geez, you know, I didn't want to overstep my bounds. I mean, yeah, I'd love to talk to Mark and Mark, you know, knew me, and he really, he's like, if you're going to do what you say you're going to do, then let's do it. Because I think it's really cool because I'm sick of going into airports and
Which airport was that and what restaurant?
Terminal 5, Aeronova, which are
at
JFK.
JFK.
Which our first executive chef for Aeronova was Mario Carbone.
That's the JetBlue terminal?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mark says to me, the only way I'm going to do it, I'm going to place a chef for you guys out there because I know I'll protect my name that way. And that was Mario Carbone. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Mario was our first chef for Aeronova for a little over a year. And then, you know, forget it. He
flew.
Oh, yeah. He came out of a phone booth and took off to, Krypton. You know, really took off. Yeah. And we're real good friends with them. They've worked now consulting with us in Newark. And he's a great ally and great friend. You know?
Right.
So getting them to believe in what we are doing. Now, you know, when people are able to see what we're able to do, now I think it's more on the crew member end of it. And having chefs getting regular a la carte chefs saying, well, you could do the same food at the airport. So that part of it, I think, there's still a challenge there.
In some ways, I think it might be more exciting because, you know, famous chefs and people all travel. And so if you're going to be out at Newark and you know there's a good restaurant there, you know, you'll say, let me get there a couple hours early.
Sure.
Check it out. You could have a lot of famous people eating in your restaurant and appreciating your food.
And they do. You know, they do every day. That's the difference. You're 100% right. Mm. You know, when... say the South Beach Food and Wine Festival is going off, there is every chef and every known chef in New York City and critic and person going through to go down there. So it's
right.
Really kind of a fun, interesting time at that point.
Well, we're going to have to bring this to a close. I got one last question for you. What's a challenge for you now? It seems like you're still, after 10 years, really excited about this concept. What keeps it exciting?
I would have to say Rick Blasting keeps it pretty exciting, and he definitely keeps his foot on the gas pedal all the way to the floor and challenges us with the concepts and the things and the visions and things we're going to do in the future are so aggressive and really cool, and you'll see coming up.
So airport food's just going to get better, huh?
Yeah, it's definitely not going to go backwards for us. It's going to continue to go forward. It's not even going to stay
level.
Level.
It's going to go. It's good. I'm glad to hear it. As a frequent flyer, thanks a lot for coming by today.
I appreciate everything. And this is such an honor to be back here and doing this with you. Thank you.
Oh, well, we're very proud of you. Take care.
Bye.
And I'd like to do a shout out to Robin Cohen, my producer. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.